What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Yes, it is Wednesday, which means hump day. So happy humping. A little bit about myself. I'm an online health and fitness expert. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation and I'm a former head of medical and performance in professional football. However, I've been in the fitness industry for over a decade and I've been helping real people feel better and move smarter. If you are sick of dodgy health advice online, you're in the right place because every week I help you cut through the chaos, confusion of the internet and nonsense, bringing clarity, evidence and a whole lot of energy. I'm always joined by expert guests as we dissect trends, bust myths and guide you towards real lasting results the healthy way. Today I'm going to be joined by Joe Bynum to discuss the Wim Hof method. However, starting, we will be joined by Dr. Sophie Bostock, who is founder and sleep, is it evangelist at the sleepscientist.com? Is that correct?
Sleep evangelist.
Evangelist. Yeah, sorry, honestly, sometimes I am terrible at pronouncing words. Dr. Sophie, good morning. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for asking. Welcome to the show. Are you in a sling?
I am. I've broken my collarbone, but oh, don't let that put you off.
Oh, no. Well, I hope you're okay. Okay? Right.
Thanks.
Let's start with the basics, okay? On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is sleep for us?
I mean, you are probably asking the wrong person, but I'm going to obviously say 10.
Okay. Perfect. Right. So what exactly is the circadian rhythm and how does it influence our sleep patterns?
Okay. So there isn't just one circadian rhythm. Circa means about, dian means day. And we have all of these 24-hour rhythms, which are hardwired into every single cell in your body. So each of your cells, organs, systems carries its own internal rhythm. And when we get things right, for example, when we wake up at the same time every single morning, all of these different circadian rhythms are operating on the same time zone and the body works really efficiently. So the rhythm that controls your appetite will be slightly different to the rhythm that controls your immune system and so on, but they are all designed so that they sync up so that we optimize our physiology for movement and social interaction and eating during daylight hours and so that we rest and recover and rejuvenate at night. I hope that makes sense.
Okay. No, I mean, yeah, it does. It really does. And how closely linked are our circadian rhythms to our physical health and our fitness performance?
I would say this is a really hot topic in both health and performance right now. Mm-hmm. So if you go back 10 years, there was loads of interest in sleep duration. And we know that getting enough sleep is important. But actually, in the last few years, we've realized it's not just how much sleep we get. Potentially even more important is when we get that sleep. Mm. So there was a study, for example, that came out last year that suggested that sleep regularity is actually a more important predictor of how long we'll live and whether or not we'll get heart disease than how many hours of sleep that we get. So this is sort of suggesting that maintaining healthy, regular circadian rhythms may have an even more protective effect on our health and performance than simply how many hours we're in bed for.
Okay, that's fascinating because obviously, I mean, I think most of the listeners are probably aware of this and I mean, the gospel is what, 7 to 8 hours and some people go, oh, that's impossible, I can't do that, I've got this, that and the other and it's like, well, I think you can because I think if you're better structured, you're better planned and you're better organized, I think it is possible. So from what you're saying is if we are better at, let's say, going to bed at 10, 11 o'clock and we do it every day, every week, every month, that is more beneficial to us and potentially getting maybe 7 hours. That's better for us than getting maybe 8 hours, but sometimes it's from 2 in the morning until 10, and sometimes it's midnight till 8, correct?
Yeah, I think that's the gist of it. And of course, we're all different and we all have a slightly different sleep need. And if you imagine 100 people, you're probably going to have a sort of bell-shaped curve where most people need 7 to 9 hours sleep to function at their best, but there'll be a minority that can thrive on a little bit less than seven. But there might well be a minority who actually need a little bit more than nine, particularly those people who are very physically active. They may well benefit from actually getting a bit more than 9 hours of sleep. But to your point, absolutely, it's probably better, particularly to focus on wake up time. I typically find that actually, if you focus on getting out of bed at the same time every day, that really sets you up for the day. Your circadian rhythms will be in sync. And it also leaves a little bit of room for maneuver. So I'm not saying that you've got to go to bed at the same time every night. If you're feeling sleepy tired half an hour before your normal bedtime, maybe you've had a big day. And actually, that's totally fine to go to bed a bit early. Likewise, if you're really not tired, don't feel that you have to get into bed at that set time. There's a little bit of room to maneuver, but I would say focus on getting out of bed at the same time as often as possible.
Okay, that's really interesting, because I would probably say I can vouch for that, because I used to do like start of the week Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like 6:30, 7 o'clock, get up, get out, and then the latter end of the later end of the week, I would maybe do 8:30, depending on how my week went. But I actually feel that now I do more 7 o'clock. It's just I feel sharper regularly.
You feel better, yeah.
Yeah,
As
even on
soon as you
weekends.
know that you're waking up without relying on an alarm clock, that's probably quite a good sign that your body is getting the rest that it needs and that your circadian rhythms are in sync. When we rely on an alarm clock, we're potentially sort of cutting that sleep short. And sometimes you need to do a bit of experimentation to work out what works best for you. And I think people often sort of despair that they think, oh, I can't get 7 hours sleep on a regular basis. That's just not realistic. Okay, well, maybe six and a half is all you can aim for, but let's try and get that at the same time each night.
Yeah, well, it's normally the ones that can't get it are the ones that have got crazy screen time, or they're glued to their phones, doom scrolling hours before they go to bed. But anyway, we won't go on to that topic.
We've all been there.
We often hear that sleep is crucial for recovery after exercise. Can you explain what actually happens in the body during sleep that aids that physical recovery?
Yeah, I mean, conceptually, you can sort of think about it like mending a car. You don't do that when it's driving along the motorway at 70 miles an hour. There are moving parts that need to recover. And sleep gives your mind, your body, the opportunity to slow everything down. So your heart rate, your breathing rate, your metabolism, everything slows right down. All your stress hormones are at rock bottom levels. And that means that the balance of hormones in the body moves much more towards anabolism, towards building things up. So overnight, you have this peak in growth hormone, and that means that the body focuses on repair. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be interested in, how they get stronger. And I often ask the question, how does a muscle get stronger? And they say, well, we go to the gym. But when you go to the gym and you lift weights, actually, your muscle temporarily becomes weaker. When you put it under stress and strain, that microscopic damage causes a temporary weakness. And it's actually during rest and recovery, which is supersized at night, where you have the right balance of hormones. And hopefully, if you've consumed enough protein during the day, you're able to then rebuild that damaged muscle and come back stronger. So for me, I'm often emphasizing that sleep is not just about getting back to where you were yesterday. When we get it right, it's about improving performance.
Okay, that's I mean, that's really, really good to hear, because I mean, I vouch about sleep all the time, and it's, it's so crucial. From a mental health perspective, how does poor sleep affect things like our mood, our focus, and our stress levels?
This is probably the clearest link, if you like, with any aspect of health. Sleep and mental health are absolutely interlinked. And what often people will recognize is that if they are stressed, they typically don't sleep so well. So the way that the body tends to respond to stress is by amping up levels of initially potentially a little adrenaline, but then also cortisol, which stays in our system for quite a few hours. So if you're stressed in the evening, then that lingering cortisol can actually interfere with getting into and staying into a deep sleep. So most people are aware of that connection and they know that it's a good idea to wind down before you get into bed. But lack of sleep also influences our stress, our vulnerability to stressful situations the next day. Mm-hmm. Because when you haven't slept enough or slept well, your brain responds by assuming that you must be in some kind of dangerous environment. Yeah. It's a trigger for our stress response system to go into high alert. So when you wake up, you may be feeling a little bit more jittery, a little bit more anxious than normal. Mm-hmm. When you go about your day, this hypersensitive stress response is more reactive than you would be on a well-slept day. So if you imagine this can get into a really negative cycle where you wake up feeling a bit more anxious than normal, things stress you out, overwhelm you more than normal. So when you get into bed, you're still feeling amped up. And when this goes on for weeks or months, it causes a state called hyperarousal, where you're just permanently a little bit wired. And you can get there in other ways as well. Overtraining, not giving yourself the opportunity to recover, can push the body into a state of hyperarousal. And that's where we often find ourselves feeling tired, but wired. We just can't switch off.
Okay. That's really interesting. I mean, I'm a big advocate for like a deload week. So obviously, you know, tapering your programming stuff, but hyperarousal. I've probably experienced that maybe once or twice in my life. Probably now you've mentioned it and I understand a little bit more about it, I can probably picture a couple of times where I've just been wired and kind of just sat there in bed like, I'm tired, but I'm stressed and overstimulated potentially.
Exactly. And I think a lot of the things that we reach for to help us recover from that state, very often our phones, although your phone may well be a way to distract you from sort of negative thoughts in particular, it's still requiring some cognitive effort, some cognitive activation. It doesn't actually allow you to rest cognitively in the same way that it might do if you were doing some meditation or listening to calming music or just hanging out with some friends or a close family member that makes you feel safe and secure.
Yeah.
Just be aware that that phone, although we're reaching for it for a distraction, very often we're tired and we just want something to take our mind off things. It actually sort of perpetuates that state of cognitive activation. It doesn't necessarily help you wind down as much as you might think that it does.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say this, because last week we had a gentleman who came on and spoke about, you know, a challenge of trying to not pick up your phone until you've done your morning routine. And that could be getting dressed, getting ready for work or whatever, because it gives us fake dopamine, like at night scrolling around. So that's really fascinating. Obviously both very, very interlinked, and our phones are probably the biggest devil in our lives right now. We obviously have brushed upon a regular sleep at the start, but obviously many people struggle with irregular sleep schedules due to work and lifestyle. How damaging can this be to our health and fitness goals in the long term? Because obviously you brushed upon it earlier on, didn't you? And you kind of said how it's bad for obviously recovery and effort levels. But was there anything else you maybe wanted to kind of add to that?
Well, I think there may well be people listening to this going, hang on a minute, I work shifts, I've got no choice.
Yes.
And I think that's really important to remember that certain of us are not in complete control. It's great if you can wake up the same time every day. That is definitely going to be my recommendation.
Yeah.
But if that is not within your power, then you've also got to look across all the other pillars of health and kind of go, okay, do you know what? My circadian rhythms are going to be a bit skew-iff because of my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to put pressure on the body. We know that that typically increases levels of cortisol, for example. And that means that you've got to look then at, okay, diet, you've got to look at exercise, you've got to look at stress relief to make sure that you're compensating for it in other ways. So that's one sort of thing to remember. Then the other is that even when we have an irregular schedule, we can still support our circadian rhythms. So one great example, particularly for shift workers, is around time of eating.
Mm.
So our bodies are more efficient at metabolizing food during daylight hours. That's when we're designed to consume food.
Yeah.
And then sort of extra calories are going to get stored in our short-term storage area, where if you overeat at night, you're much more likely to store that excess energy as fat. So we know shift workers are at greater risk of weight gain, for example. So knowing that, we can go, okay, whatever happens to my shift work schedule, I'm going to aim to eat most of my calories during daylight hours. I don't really want to mess with my eating schedule too much because nobody really adjusts their circadian rhythms to night shift work. They tend to, perhaps be able to adjust by an hour every 24 hours, but not an awful lot more than that. So if we try and maintain eating during daylight hours, get as much darkness 2 hours before you're going to get into bed and try and go to sleep as possible. And that might mean, for example, coming off a night shift and putting sunglasses on so that you're not getting exposure to bright light. That will really help you with winding down for sleep.
That's really interesting. Like, I work with a lot of shift workers and stuff, and so fascinating. When we talk about disruptions to cardiac rhythm, do we find that it impacts weight management as well as metabolism?
Yes, we typically see that people who have more irregular schedules are more at risk of gaining weight. And as you say, in terms of cardiac risk, we tend to see that they have higher rates of cardiovascular disease. And it may well have a lot to do with inflammation. We know that sleep is one of those brilliant anti-inflammatory tools. And if we start changing the time of sleep and our sleep is not at night, it's less efficient at mopping up inflammation.
We've spoken about bad sleep patterns. Do you feel that they can sabotage fitness goals as well? Because obviously we've spoken about other parts of fitness and health, but actual goals. So do you think that's true, or do you feel like it's a bit of a myth?
No, absolutely true. And I think where it's really noticeable is on that perceived effort scale. So when you haven't slept so well, it's not that your fitness changes dramatically the next day,
RPE
but
is higher.
the perception of effort typically increases. So you tend to find that people perform a little bit worse, particular endurance exercises. Ultimately, their power doesn't really massively change from one day to the next, but their ability to sustain that power and to overcome that kind of lapse in motivation, that becomes much more difficult. And of course, just being aware of that is one way to tackle it and kind of say, okay, I didn't sleep so well last night. This is probably going to feel hard. Listen to your body. But in the long term, prolonged sleep deprivation is going to have an impact on your ability to recover properly and hit your fitness goals.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I used that. I've just started using a traffic light system with my female clients with their cycles. So that's really interesting because that could probably be used quite nicely where, if it's an amber or it's a red day because of fatigue or whatnot, you would taper what they do because, again, when we're green, we're RPE is 6, 7, 8, but when we're amber or red, it's 8, 9, 10. Like, we want to
Yeah,
avoid things like
absolutely.
that.
And there's lots of reasons, as well as, sleep deprivation that could feed into that. There was one study that's tried to collate lots of different evidence about the impact of lack of sleep on sports performance. And they found that across sort of 70 different trials, that getting 6 hours sleep or less was associated with a 7.6% deficit in performance.
That's
So
huge.
that's huge. We talk about trying to get 1% here or there, but actually, if you just sleep well, you could well end up with much greater improvements.
And we're going to move on to the final few questions. Are there some, what are some of the most common mistakes people make that unknowingly throw off their cardiac rhythm? Circadian rhythm, sorry.
Circadian rhythm. I would say this is going to sound pretty silly, but just going into a really bright bathroom just before you're about to go to sleep, or even in the middle of the night.
I don't
If
think that's
you
silly.
switch all those lights on, if you're exposed to that, perhaps when you're taking some makeup off or brushing your teeth for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, then that actually could delay your melatonin onset and make it harder to go to sleep. So just being conscious of that last, particularly 90 minutes before you get into bed, avoid bright lights, full stop. And if it's the middle of the night, then just dim lights.
That's brilliant. That's amazing. It kind of takes over a little bit onto my last question. I was going to say, you know, for the listeners trying to improve both their sleep and their fitness, what are some practical habits that they can implement maybe tonight, and how quickly might they notice a difference? So maybe changing light bulbs to dimmer light bulbs or something like that, but I'm sure you have a couple more.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a bit about the importance of light, but there is no doubt that regardless of what time that you get up in the morning, getting exposure to bright natural light within the first 20 minutes of waking up is going to do a huge amount for your mood, but also in resetting your circadian rhythm. And in the wintertime, when a lot of people complain, hey, it's dark outside when I get up, using really bright artificial light. So
the
last few years, I've used a dawn simulation alarm clock, which sort of looks like a bright light getting gradually lighter in the half hour before I wake up. I've found that really helpful for waking up early in the morning. So that's something that people might want to invest in or experiment with in the winter months.
Amazing. Right. Well, Dr. Sophie, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you online? Do you have a website? Do you have social media?
Sure. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Sophie Bostock, and I have a website, thescientist.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day, and I will speak to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be joined by Joe Bynum, Wim Hof, founder and instructor.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness, and I need him to be kind.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way from this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out".
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more!
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this. Yeah. You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
Follow us at What the Health Show for more with George. This is What the Health.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. I'm now joined by Joe Bynum, who is a Wim Hof instructor and founder of A Matter of Ice and Breath. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's good to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, as always. Right, so we're going to dive straight into it. For those who may not be familiar, can you explain what the Wim Hof method is and how it works?
Yeah, sure. So the Wim Hof method is a wellness tool. It was designed or created by a gentleman called Wim Hof from the Netherlands, who he really created it while he was recovering from a personal tragedy. And he went out into nature and discovered that nature was really a very good teacher during hard times. And it really combines what we call the three pillars. So we have the first pillar of gradual cold exposure. We have the second pillar of conscious breathing or breath work. And then we have the third pillar, which is mindset training. And it combines all of these really to encourage us to use resources that are around us, that are within us, to help improve the connection with ourselves and with the people around us in our life, with nature around us, with the ultimate goal of trying to make us a little bit happier, stronger, and healthier. And the principle behind the Wim Hof method, really, the thing that the science that underpins it, mm-hmm. is this concept of what we call hormesis, which is that we have these acute short-term stresses, which in short doses bring very, very beneficial, positive changes to our body, physically and mentally, which in the longer term would be damaging for us. So, mm-hmm. for example, cold exposure for a vast period of time would yes. be quite damaging to our health. But in short doses, it brings these physiological changes. And it's worth noticing as well that there's this idea that stress is really a continuum. And on one end of stress, you have doing too little. So too little stress leads us to atrophy, right? We don't stress the body enough. Mm-hmm. So we don't adapt. We don't become resilient. On the other end, we have this idea of toxic stress, which is this chronic stress that never goes away. Mm-hmm. Both ends of that spectrum are undesirable. And the stresses in the Wim Hof method lies somewhere in the middle. It's okay. that stress to bring about positive change, but not so much that it's going to damage us.
Hmm. Okay. Now, I can see that. I obviously understand that, you know, not enough load and not enough, you know, of anything can cause atrophy. We need to use it or lose it, right? We got to move. Otherwise, we do have atrophy occur. And then I get the other end is, you know, debilitating, sickening, can be, you know, like you said, chronic and whatnot. So cold water immersion is a big part of the Wim Hof method. What are some of the main benefits people can expect from regular cold exposure?
Yeah, so we start with gradual cold exposure. So mm-hmm. That's the key point. We're not just dumping ourselves into ice necessarily from the beginning. We're building up slowly. We could start with a cold shower to get used to it, to build that adaptation. But if we're talking about ice baths specifically, we know from the science that there are very powerful physiological changes that occur when we go into the cold water. So, for example, we get a release of certain hormones in the body. One of these is noradrenaline. We get a 500% increase in noradrenaline by entering the ice. So that's the adrenaline in our system. And we also get a 250% increase in dopamine. That's our motivation molecule. That's our reward molecule. That sense of pleasure or feeling of goodness that you get from a job well done. That mm-hmm. is all associated with that dopamine. And we know that these two hormones have a really, really powerful effect on our mood. So immediately by going into the cold, we're boosting these hormones. So we get that feel-good feeling. It's very, very good for our mood if we're feeling low. But these hormones also play another role. Adrenaline or noradrenaline is anti-inflammatory in nature in small doses. So they actually reduce inflammation in the body and they boost the anti-inflammatory markers in our blood as well. So we are reducing inflammation in the body by going into the cold. Mm-hmm. And we're also boosting what we call our innate immune system, which is our first line of defense when we first get sick or when we get a cut and our body reacts to this invader. Our innate immune system kicks in. And the cold is actually able to stop the innate immune system from overreacting. So it's very useful in calming our innate immune system. Then on a more physical basis, we have a huge cardiovascular workout from going into the cold. Our cardiovascular system is made up of all of these veins and arteries and things and capillaries. And when we go into the cold, our smooth muscle cells, which are the cells around our blood vessels, constrict in order to protect our core body temperature. So we're actually working these small muscle cells. If we spend a little bit longer in the cold, these start to relax, so we get dilation as well. And throughout a cycle of cold dipping, we get this constant constriction and dilation of the smooth muscle cells. So it's very good for working out the cardiovascular system, which without ever having to get on a running machine, I might add, which is a benefit for me because I'm not a big fan of running machines. But then also the ice bath challenges us to use our breath to calm ourselves down when we're in there. So when we enter into the cold, we get this huge rush. We go into the fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. That is our sympathetic nervous system activating, saying, hey, we're under threat. And in the first 30 to 60 seconds, roughly, it can be quite unpleasant. There's a discomfort. And if we stay with the breath, if we're able to calm the breathing, keep our focus in the ice, eventually we're able to use this breath to switch us over into the parasympathetic state, which is our rest and relax state. There's this moment of, it's not too bad in here.
Yeah.
And with that comes the training of stress. That's this concept of resilience, because our body responds to stress mostly in the same way. It can't distinguish between whether we are in an ice bath, if we're running from a lion, if we're stuck in traffic, or if we're having a really difficult conversation at work with our boss. Our system goes into this fight or flight response. And there is a concept here of, if we can train ourselves to calm down in the ice, then we are able to train ourselves to deal with stress in other situations in our life.
Okay, that's really fascinating. Like, obviously, I'm a big fan of cold water immersion for certain reasons. I worked in professional sport and in the rehab kind of world. It's interesting hearing obviously your side of things compared to obviously what I know about heat and stuff. But this is really interesting and stuff. So many people are hesitant about cold water therapy. How do you help beginners overcome that initial fear or kind of discomfort? You've mentioned breath work and obviously the gradual cold exposure. Is that literally how you would start? Or
so I think it's a really, really good question. And I think the first thing to recognize is that it is a totally normal response to have, to be hesitant about the cold. From a very human aspect, especially in the 21st century, we're almost spoiled by the comfort that we have. And it's quite an unusual characteristic to seek out a deliberately uncomfortable situation, if you see what I mean. So yeah. I think the first thing to notice is really that's a very normal feeling to have. It's very common that people are quite terrified of the cold, in fact. Firstly, I would say that mindset is a huge part of this method, and this underlying belief that we are far, far more capable of things than we give ourselves credit for. And so for those people that are hesitant, I would say, yes, absolutely, start gradually. We know from the science that to get the benefit from cold exposure, we do not need extreme temperatures. We do not need extreme times. In fact, there are studies now that show even cold showers of 30 seconds a day is enough to reduce the amount of self-reported sick days from work. So we know that very short exposure in pretty mild temperatures, okay, it's still unpleasant, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but 30 seconds is...
But it's not, we need to move away from this mindset of extremes.
Mm.
It's not necessary, especially in the beginning. So I would say start slowly, start with a shower, maybe 15 seconds of cold water at the end of your regular shower, and then build up gradually over time and really focusing on preparing yourself mentally. We don't want to rush anything. We don't want to force anything. We really want to get into that mindset of we can do this, 15 seconds, focusing on those long, slow exhales through the mouth and nice inhales through the nose.
Yeah, see, Joe, I really like what you said there about the extremes. I think we are all so guilty of finding something new online and go, I want to try this, and then absolutely bombing ourselves with it for weeks and then just giving up. Oh, that was too hard.
Yeah.
You know, just drip feed it into your life. It's like, oh, I'll start tomorrow. Well, it's not even 12 o'clock. Why don't you just start now? You know, you've still got maybe another 10 hours left of your day before you go to bed. Why don't you just start implementing some things? Why don't you try and do your cold shower after, you know, your 15 seconds after at the end of the day? You know, just simple things like that.
Exactly. And just to add to that, I had a very good conversation with someone the other day exactly on this topic. And she came to me. She'd been practicing actually contrast therapy between sauna and ice baths. But she was asking me, at what point am I supposed to go to? She was doing ice baths that were over 10 minutes long in cycles of three or four cycles, 20 to 30 minutes in the sauna between goes.
Yeah.
And you've got to take a step back at a certain point and say, what's your end goal in this?
Mm-hmm.
We need to be steered by the science, but we also need to be steered by, at what point are you happy that you've achieved what you have set out to achieve?
Yeah, no, so true, so true. Obviously, you mentioned the breathing components in the Wim Hof method. Can you explain how the breathing technique works and why it's so important?
Yeah, so the breath work is sometimes what we call controlled hyperventilation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people hear that word and they panic a little bit because there's an association there of the hyperventilation that we might experience during an anxiety or panic attack.
Mm.
But the real clear distinction here is that this is a controlled form of hyperventilation. It's a deep diaphragmatic breath that we are consciously choosing to breathe in this way.
Mm.
We are in control at all times. So at any point that we feel uncomfortable, we can go back to our regular breathing. But the reason why we do this deep diaphragmatic breathing, these deep inhales and a sigh, is that it allows us to blow off carbon dioxide. Mm. So effectively, we can lower the level of carbon dioxide that we have circulating in our body, in our blood, to a level that is lower than we typically would.
Mm-hmm.
And carbon dioxide serves several purposes in the body. It is not a bad thing. We need a certain level of carbon dioxide most of the time to breathe healthily. But carbon dioxide, one of its role is it triggers our urgency to breathe. And when we get rid of that carbon dioxide, when we lower that carbon dioxide beyond a certain threshold, we're actually able to hold our breath for far longer than we typically would be able to.
Hmm.
And in the Wim Hof method breathing, we have several rounds of this style of hyperventilation, followed by gradually increasing soft breath holds.
Okay.
And over 3 to 4 rounds of this breathing, we are able to actually reach a point where we become hypoxic in the body. So our oxygen level hits the deficit zone. And this goes back to that principle of hormesis again. It's a hormetic stressor. So on a cellular basis, we are reducing our oxygen level, which stresses the body in a good way, in a short-term way. This breathing releases, again, a huge amount of adrenaline, In fact, even just the mouth breathing, the nature of how, as we get used to the breathing, we may switch to mouth breathing. Mouth breathing and fast breathing triggers the sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight response. And that alone has physiological effects on our body, the release of adrenaline, the way that we use glucose in the body as a result. But from the effects of the adrenaline itself, again, we're seeing anti-inflammation in the body. We're seeing a boost in the immune system function.
Okay.
Carbon dioxide itself is also a very powerful vasodilator. So when we get rid of the carbon dioxide, we are able to constrict our blood vessels. So we're working that cardiovascular system again.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, but certainly for me, what I've found the most important is it really almost feels like a reset for the nervous system. There is a calmness, a mood boost, a sense of deep connection with the breath and with ourselves that comes with this practice. And it really helps to build this mind-body connection, the ability to feel these sensations in the body whilst we're breathing consciously.
Okay. So obviously you said a lot about the physical benefits, but are there any mental and emotional benefits from practicing the Wim Hof method?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, there's that sense of calm that can come. There is when we switch into the parasympathetic state, that nervous system that is associated with rest and relaxation. Yeah. We call it the rest and digest state.
Mm-hmm.
We can feel safe. We can feel calm, which is terrific for our mental health. But also these hormones again, the feel-good hormones. Dopamine being boosted, noradrenaline being boosted. To give you an example of its use in medicine today, many ADHD and depression medications have some aspect of them that simulate the production of noradrenaline and dopamine.
Okay,
they make us feel good. So it's actually a key component of certain ADHD medications. So for people who are experiencing a deficit in noradrenaline or dopamine, there is a suggestion that by doing this method, by boosting our noradrenaline and dopamine, we can feel benefits from it, and it can have a huge effect on how we feel. Anecdotally, I run a very regular cold water dipping group twice a week, actually, in addition to my Wim Hof method workshops. I have a large number of people who come with anxiety, depression, and especially ADHD. And there is something very beneficial that they find from going into the cold.
Life-changing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, really powerful.
Okay. Right. Final few questions for you. How would a typical session look like, you know, especially for someone who's just getting started? I know you brushed upon, obviously, the gradual immersion at the start, and you've brushed upon a few things, like, but maybe talk us through, like, what a session would look like, how long would it last, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I would say, like, the textbook response would be start your day with the Wim Hof method. It's a great way to deal with cortisol. We have very high cortisol when we wake up in the morning, so it is a good way to recover from that. It's also a way of starting the day with a challenge overcome and all of the benefits that come with that, the sense of achievement, and just that reset to get us going at the start of the day. Now, some people are going to find that they're not normal. They're not morning people. Some people are going to find that they are more evening. You might be a bit of a night owl. So it's not a hard rule that this has to be done in the morning. But typically, textbook case would be do it in the morning. If not, exactly as you said earlier on, find what works for your lifestyle and fit it in. Typically, you would start with breath work. So you might get up out of bed so you don't fall asleep. set up your yoga mat or find a place on the sofa, somewhere where you can lie down or sit down without a risk of falling over and hurting yourself. And you would do probably three rounds to begin with as you get used to it, three rounds of the breathing. You can use the Wim Hof Method app to follow along, or there's also free videos available on YouTube explaining how to do that. And of course, the website wimhofmethod.com has plenty of information. And then after the breathing, you'll give it a few minutes to recover. And then you might go and take your regular morning shower. Start with your hot water, as you normally do, and end with 15 seconds of cold. Build from there. If you can get to about 2 to 3 minutes in the cold shower, I would say that's a really good place to then start to explore the option of doing ice baths.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Joe, that is amazing and very insightful and super, super informative. So thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you online? You got a website? Have you got social media?
Yeah, so I'm on social media under the handle at A Matter of Ice and Breath. But you can also find me via the Wim Hof Method website under the instructors page. There's instructors all over the world. So no matter where you're listening from, you absolutely can find someone near you who you can work with. There's a range of options to do one-to-ones or group workshops. But yeah, if you'd like to work with me, that would be fantastic. And you can find me at A Matter of Ice and Breath. Before I go, I did just want to say, from a safety perspective as well, it's really important that we don't do the breathing anywhere in or around water. Safety must be our top priority at all times. That's why we say we build gradually. We never force anything. Mm-hmm. We keep that sense of play, but we have to be sensible and respectful with how we approach the cold. And similarly, there are some people that this method is not going to be suitable for. We usually say that the Wim Hof Method is safe for everyone of at least average health, but it's not going to be safe for people who have heart conditions, mm-hmm. who have epilepsy or are pregnant. And so I would recommend that people go to the Wim Hof Method website and check the safety briefing just to make sure that it's suitable for them. And if in doubt, check with a doctor.
Amazing. Well, super insightful. Thank you so much for that safety information at the end. And you have a great rest of your day, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, Joe. You take care. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after the break, we're going to be doing some listener questions.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
So we've got Dr. Matt Morgan. Someone's heart stopped beating for 8 hours.
So he was stuck on a ledge in a freezing snowstorm, and his heart stopped for an amazing 9 hours. He's still the world's longest surviving cardiac arrest patient. And he lived because he was cold. You know, there's a saying, you're not dead until you're warm and dead.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Up now is Ephraim Mason-Clark, professional footballer. You got the chance to work under Frank Lampard. Just tell me a little bit about him.
The first day he came in, it was just like, the word isn't starstruck, but it's just like, this is a legend in not just English football, but football in the whole world. So at the start, it was more of like, wow. And then it's like, you just switch off from being a fan to, this is like the gaffer now.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Welcome back to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Right, we're going to go into some listener questions. Hi, Georges. There's so much information about supplements for recovery online. I'm struggling to afford buying them all. Which one do you think are actually worth it? Which are overhyped? Wow, really good question. I mean, I could probably go on for hours with this. The best thing for recovery and the best supplements that you probably need are protein, which you're probably going to get naturally from food. So I wouldn't buy them. I wouldn't buy protein as a supplement, although it's the cheapest per... I think it's like the cheapest protein you can get out there. Like, it's the cost per gram or cost per serving is phenomenal compared to, for example, meat, which is why some people just, you know, have more shakes than anything else. Creatine's amazing, and electrolytes are super important as well. But in regards to recovery, you need lots of water, you need lots of rest, sleep, and you need lots of carbohydrates and, again, protein. So anything protein-based is going to be really good for your recovery. Next question. I've started going to the gym over the past 2 months, but I'm only doing cardio. How important is strength training for weight loss, or am I doing the right thing by just doing cardio? If you're just looking for weight loss, just do whatever, really, because weight loss is just you losing mass from your body, right? That's water, muscle, and fat. But if the goal is actually fat loss, then you need to be looking at strength training. There's research out there to back that strength training alone is all you need to lose fat along with a calorie deficit. So that means you doing a calorie deficit, weight training or strength training and cardio is less effective than doing calorie deficit and weight or strength training. Research has shown that. Research has backed it. I mean, if you really want me to go into details, we can. Next time, I will get the article, but hopefully that helps. Next question. Hi, mate. I've been in a calorie deficit since the start of the year, but now I've got loads of events coming up and I'm feeling guilty about drinking, barbecues. Do you have any advice? Yes, I do, and I'm going to give you the advice that I would give my clients. If it's a birthday, you get one a year. Christmas, you get one a year. Family events, you get a couple a year. Long and short is if you do something called calorie banking throughout the week, so let's say your maintenance calories is 2,000 calories a day, okay, and you're worried about going over on the weekends, well, why don't you have 1,700 calories during the week, which then gives you 300 calories more, and then on the day of the event, don't have breakfast, which means you've got more food, you've got more opportunity to enjoy yourself and not feel guilty. Because although we haven't spoken about it this week, weight fluctuations can happen from anything. We're talking volume of food, we're talking intense exercise, to more hydration, you know, alcohol consumption. You have to go 7,000 calories. I think it's actually 7,700, but 7,000 calories over your weekly maintenance to potentially gain 1 kilo of fat. Now, that's a lot of food, but if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, if you were to do 2,000 over 1 week, 3,000 the next, 4,000 the next, that's why weight creeps on. because it gradually increases. So hopefully that helps. Enjoy yourself outside. Don't get too pissed. And yeah, just have fun, guys. That's the main thing. The sun's not out very often in the UK. Anyway, guys, just a massive thank you to our guests today, Sophie and Joe, for joining us on What the Health. This is a reminder you can download the app and listen each week and follow us on social media. We are at What the Health Show on Instagram. If you want any help with your health and fitness goals, I provide a top-tier coaching service, which is no BS. I problem solve and I hold your hand the whole way. If you're interested, then please reach out to me at gb.fitness.health. The show is also available to listen back on all good podcasting platforms. Just another thank you. We're back next week at 11 a.m. for another jam-packed show on Wednesday. I'm Georges. Thanks for listening. Love you. Bye.
Foo Bar Radio.